So to begin with, I'd like to say yes to the brother of the world, Loka Bandhu, who as always is currently of no fixed abode.
Well, I'm tempted to say the cow is in the field, to Shrivati, and see what happens. The cow is in the field. Flowers grow here. I wasn't going to say that at all before she provoked me in that way. I'm very happy to be able to speak to you today. Yes, so thank you very much for the invitation. The invitation reached me in India sometime, I think, in January. And immediately I said yes. I've kind of got a policy of saying yes to anything and worrying about it later. So I said yes immediately. But my reflections kind of started off, as it were, immediately in India. And I found myself feeling immediately I wanted to start this talk by rejoicing in two special things about the order. The first one was our diversity. I felt again and again and again so happy to be part of a community with this much diversity. It could be more diverse, Shrivati is quite right, but I just don't know where else I would ever find such a various and interesting and wacky and talented and different bunch of people. It's fantastic. I love it. So I rejoice in that very, very much. My brother is a chartered accountant, and sometimes I visit him, and sometimes I meet his friends, but it's all in such a small world, you know. You just have chartered accountant friends if you're a chartered accountant and not a Buddhist. So I'm just so happy I never followed that path, and instead I've joined the order and part of our diversity. The second thing I wanted to rejoice in is a little bit harder to explain, but it's the freedom we have in the order to be diverse. Somehow built into our founding principles is that freedom. It's not like somebody's in charge and they kind of pat us on the head one by one and say, you go being diverse over there, and you go over there and be diverse over there. We're just free to be diverse and follow our own unfolding individuality. I think this is because we have such a clear understanding of the essentials of Buddhism, that actually what it's all about is going for refuge more and more effectively to the three jewels. That's what we have in common, and once we have that in common, we can unfold in so many different ways. And we see that so clearly, and so we can be so diverse. But I rejoice in that founding principle of our order. And I rejoice in Bhante because it comes so much from Bhante, that clarity and that sort of principle. Since the invitation reached me in India, and since those preliminary reflections, a lot of things have happened in the order. In particular, Yashimitra's article has kind of opened another chapter in our unfolding, you know, history, I suppose. And I found myself wondering what I think about it. One thing that's come to me, which I'd like to say, is a third reason to rejoice in our order. And I rejoice in our independence, I think that's the word, in our collective maturity, and from that, our independence. In a sense, I mean our independence from Bhante, the fact that we just exist. We do exist and will continue to exist, in a way, whatever happens. I think it's extraordinary that somehow between us, we've created that strength and confidence and maturity so quickly. But I do feel confident in it, and I rejoice in it. It's like we've kind of grown up, and we're still growing up, but we have grown up. So I rejoice in our independence. I've had all sorts of other reflections, of course, in the last few weeks. I don't want to talk about them now. I just want to say one thing, one kind of personal reflection, which is I feel we still have a long way to go in telling our history to ourselves, but also to the world. And what's happening is slowly, and a bit clumsily perhaps, our history is being told. But I feel we need to find ways to tell our history more and more effectively and more authentically and more deeply, and doing justice more and more to all its different dimensions. I had a vision a while back, long before Yashamitra, of a sort of scrapbook history where we'd flesh out the chronology of the order, and then everybody could just contribute anything they liked to all the events, 1, 2, 3, 4, to 1,000. A bit like Shabda's, just a random collection. And everybody would put in their points of view to this whole chronology and leave it up to the reader to make what sense they could of it. That's my best idea for our history. It's not easy to tell a history. Anyway, I'm not meant to be talking about the order or the history. I'm meant to be talking about lifestyle, my lifestyle in particular. So I'll do that. I also want to rejoice in my lifestyle. I love my lifestyle. I'm really happy with it. I feel slightly apologetic because I haven't led it for very long, and I don't make any promises how long I'll continue to lead it. So I don't feel particularly experienced or particularly expert or anything like that, but at the moment I am leading it and I love it. I hope no one here thinks I still work for Subhuti, and I'm going to talk about the lifestyle of Subhuti's secretary, because I left that 15 months ago. So I can't do that. My present lifestyle is homeless. For the last year and a half, roughly, I've been homeless and itinerant, pretty much constantly travelling about from here to there on the move. I divide my time between England and India. In England, I'm very much part of the Buddhafield Sangha, and in India, I'm very much part of the team teaching at Bodh Gaya. Something that's very important to me at the moment is having as few possessions as possible. I just gave them all away when I left Birmingham, and pretty much I just have a rucksack I carry on my back. The only thing I failed to give away, I tried again and again, is my Mitra study notes. Aren't I good? I threw them in the bin 3 times when I was leaving Birmingham. Each time I thought, no, I can't do that. So I have a rucksack and a whole shelf of Mitra study notes. But I do have few possessions, as few as possible. But along with a few possessions, I've just got many friends. And I think that's what sustains me in a homeless and itinerant life. I seem to have many friends scattered about Britain and India, quite enough to sustain a sort of wandering lifestyle. And I very much value the fact I'm putting my faith or security, or if you like, going for refuge, more and more to friends rather than material possessions. It just feels very appropriate to me. I'm supported financially by Dana, and again, I'm very happy to be in a position of relying totally on Dana for my support. Mostly it comes from the London Buddhist Centre, and I feel very, very grateful to the London Buddhist Centre for that. Along the way, in travelling, I spend a lot of time just visiting friends and sort of catching up with them. I'm Buddhafield's Mitra convener for men, and Buddhafield, the Mitras do live scattered about a bit, so I go around visiting them. As well as that, there's a lot of retreats I do. And as well as that, in a sense, what I really want to do is find ways to do more and more outreach, more and more time and energy going into spreading the Dharma outside our existing movement and order. In a way, outside centres. It would be very easy to spend all my time visiting friends. I've got a room full of friends, you know, right here. But I want to go outside the boundaries of our order, meet people who've never heard of the Dharma, and have some effect in some way upon them. This is my present sort of imperative, I think. You could say myth, but it's a bit vague. A sort of imperative. I kind of want to test myself. You know, can I communicate to people in this way? When I was trying to sum all this up as succinctly as possible, I feel a little bit like I'm an anagarika without the celibacy. Something like that. I'm working on it. But that's the best I've got to. An anagarika without the celibacy. Fewness of possessions, homeless, kind of careerless, but I'm working on the big one. I just want to say a few kind of further reflections about my lifestyle. One thing that sustains me in it is that I feel it's very close to the Buddha's lifestyle. I go to India, I go to Bodh Gaya, I lead pilgrimages, and I feel strongly in contact with the Buddha and the way the Buddha lived his life. And he was itinerant, he was homeless. He had far fewer possessions than me. He relied on dana. And that sustains me very much, just being close to the Buddha. I feel more and more freedom in it. The less I own, the more freedom I have. Right now I've got a rucksack, which is a little bit heavy. If it was lighter, if I owned less, I would feel freer. If I didn't have a shelf of Mitra study notes, I'd feel freer. It'd be one less thing to worry about. But I do find more and more, the less I own, the more free I feel. There's a beautiful quotation, I'm sure you know, in The Thousand Petal Lotus by Bhante, that the monk with his robe and bowl is like the two wings of a bird. With that, he can fly anywhere. And I think that's what I aspire to. It's difficult in England because the culture doesn't sustain us very much, but the Sangha does. Another reflection is a growing appreciation of our institutions. I just feel really grateful to our institutions. I want to be a homeless wanderer, but it's so nice and so refreshing to be able to visit centres and communities and folk living there and just benefit from the stability and, if you like, comfort you can find there when you need it from time to time. So I do feel very appreciative of our institutions. And I also rejoice in trying to make my life more and more sort of human-centred. It's not where I started life. I started life completely up in my head, burying myself in books and ideas and computers and all that sort of stuff. Go for refuge to that. Slowly, slowly, my life is more and more centred around human beings. And I just feel very happy that this is happening, and being homeless helps make it happen for me at the moment. Also, it's a lifestyle where I have to abandon more and more any notion of rights. You have very few rights if you're homeless, if you rely on dana, if you don't own any particular property in any particular place. We live in a society where everything is owned by somebody. If you don't own any of it, you don't have any right to any of it, hardly. So I have to give up more and more the notion of rights. I have no right to stay with anybody. It's pure dana. And instead, put enough effort into mutual goodwill that they are happy to give to me, and then I'm happy to give to them, and the goodwill just flows. Sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes I feel I wish, you know, I had something guaranteed, but I don't. A last one, I think, is something that Shantideva says in the Bodhicharya, in that when I'm homeless, I tend to have fairly short meetings with lots of people. Short meetings, a couple of days, then I move on. Short meetings, a couple of days, move on. So I find myself more and more wanting to make every moment count. Shantideva says, I think, whenever I meet anybody, may it never be meaningless for them. And I respond to that very strongly. Anytime I meet somebody, how can you make it count? I could go on and on with reflections, but time is short. I just want to talk very briefly about the difficulties that this lifestyle has thrown up for me at the moment. The first thing you might think is a difficulty I haven't found at all, which is the basic business of being homeless. I love being homeless. I just delight in it. And I feel no insecurity or anxiety or, you know, miserableness from that at all. I find being homeless the easy bit. I find having few possessions the easy bit too. I think people just get into a bad habit with possessions. And you just give it all away and build up a new habit of not owning all this stuff, and you're much happier. But it's not always easy. And the most complicated thing I found is the business of being homeless and trying to engage in a particular task with other people. My sangha's Butterfield. Many Butterfield people are also homeless, but some of them live down in Devon, and they're the sort of core of the project. And I kind of orbit Devon. I go and visit there, I come and I go. And it's become clearer and clearer to me, it's not straightforward cooperating when some people live in a core, a stable community core, and some people come and go. It's quite a sensitive dynamic. It requires a lot of sensitivity and empathy between the people coming in, sort of breezing in with their bright ideas, and the people at the core who are kind of keeping it all together and feeling a bit overworked and underpaid and so on. And that issue is very much in process at the moment. I'm sure we'll sort it out, but it's the most tricky thing I've found for me. It would be easy just to be homeless, itinerant, and sort of drift about. Much more difficult to cooperate actively. I could talk all about outreach and how to do outreach, but I won't do that. I'll just conclude, in fact, because time is short. Conclude by rejoicing, again, in our diversity as an order. I do think we are so wonderfully diverse. I love it. And I just love the fact we will become more and more and more diverse as time goes by. I rejoice in the fact built into our order is that freedom, the freedom to be diverse, because we have basic principles so clear. I rejoice in the maturity and the independence of the order, that we are so, well, independent. We will continue whatever happens. I don't doubt that in the least. And I rejoice in my present lifestyle of homelessness. I won't say it's the best one. It'll be tempting to. I'll just say that, in a way, I found myself wishing we had enough time today to be a sort of Mahayana Sutra, and every one of the 1,000 order members came up and spoke in this way. I think I'd happily listen to it hour after hour. We haven't got time, but I can say I'm very much looking forward to Surya Gupta, who's our next speaker. So thank you very much. I wish I could say more, but I'll move on.